My name is Andrew Chiguri, and today I'm joined by Neil Herman, who is the portfolio manager of the Henderson Smaller Companies Investment Trust. Today, we'll be talking about the factors currently affecting the UK market, and we'll be looking at small cap stocks in particular and how they're navigating challenges such as inflation, supply chain disruptions. And we'll also talk about how Neil factors ESG into his stock selection process. Neil, welcome to the show.
Afternoon, Andrew.
So Neil, while the UK market, largely the FTSE 100 companies, have performed well so far this year, smaller companies have struggled. How has the trust performed year to date?
I think let's step back and think about what's been happening in markets this year so far and why I suppose they've been as difficult as they have been. Mm-hmm. I mean, number of reasons, I'll go in kind of descending order really. First up, COVID, clearly not such an issue really for UK markets or Western economies, but clearly an issue for particularly Asian markets and China in particular. And the lockdowns we've seen, you know, zero tolerance policy with COVID has obviously seen supply chain difficulties across the globe being exacerbated by that. Secondly, Ukraine. War was never particularly helpful for equity markets, clearly a humanitarian disaster. In reality, the Russian, Belarusian and Ukraine economies aren't that important for the global economy, but it's really the impact on supply chains, particularly through things like the price of oil, gas, and also food prices too, which have clearly pushed up inflation, which we'll come back to in terms of what's been happening there. Knock-on impact, cost of living crisis in the UK. We've clearly seen pressure on UK consumer, higher inflation, low consumer confidence, and a retrenchment of spending. And I suppose most importantly, you know, why markets have been so tricky this year is around this whole point about higher inflation and the central bank's need and requirement to control that. What does that mean? Essentially, we've moved from a kind of fairly dovish to hawkish policy on interest rates, a move from quantitative easing to quantitative tightening, an attempt to essentially cool inflation. Central banks are raising interest rates at a reasonably high pace, which could push the global economy into recession. So this is all kind of fairly bad macro news, and that's why small caps done as badly as they have done.
Yeah.
Small caps have clearly underperformed large cap by a reasonable margin, because small caps tend to do worse in periods when economic environment worsens. Also, large cap has had things like high exposure to oil and gas, which have done well given the rise in the oil prices. Trust had a tricky 2022 so far. You know, that point about small caps clearly underperforming and by a reasonable margin, but also because we've got a very growth focus in our funds. We do believe growth is the way you should look for things in equities, particularly in small cap. And the point about rising interest rates is that those companies which have got kind of long earnings flows into the future, higher discount rates means they get derated. So small growth has performed very poorly versus value, and hence the reason why our fund has had a difficult period of time.
You did mention there that equity markets are down at the moment, but again, on the flip side of that, that does provide investors with opportunities to either top up or buy new companies at more reasonable, attractive valuations. Are you finding any opportunities in the market at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think we're always looking for attractive new investments. I think for the first half of this year, actually quite a light period for new additions in the portfolio. Only four new names, which have been Kinetic, which is a defence services company, clearly benefiting from the rise in defence spending post-Ukraine. A couple of property companies, Harworth, which is urban regeneration and workspace at short-term rental in London. And also, we've invested in Rathbones, which is a private client wealth manager. And that's really after the bid for Brewin Dolphin from Royal Bank of Canada. We think Rathbones is probably the next taxi in the rank, to be honest, actually. So a light period of new additions. However, I think equity market falls have provided significant opportunity to top up our existing positions. So a lot of our most favoured names have performed, you know, quite poorly this year. That as growth has derated and values come back into fashion. A lot of our things that we like that haven't been impacted structurally, what's happening, have got great long-term opportunity, but are much cheaper. So that's been the main focus, has been essentially topping up existing positions where we feel there's great value in the kind of the medium to longer term.
I mean, you've talked about topping up some of the stocks within the portfolio, but are there any sectors you're divesting from because they won't perform well in the current market environment?
Yeah, clearly we have to sell to buy, so we can't create money out of thin air, unfortunately. So look, I think there's been a few bids in our portfolio which have turned into cash. So a couple from last year, and obviously you mentioned Brewin Dolphin, for example, and also Ultra Electronics, so that's produced some cash. We've also sold down some positions where we felt that they were due for underperformance, either because of their own particular issues or because of the macro environment, but really more about them not really coming up to our standards in terms of their investment performance. So we've had some ability to refresh that capital, move it into different areas.
An interesting point is, historically when real oil or commodity prices have been up this much, which leads to high inflation and subsequently tighter monetary policy, and we've had a recession. How do small cap stocks perform in such an environment, and how do you navigate such a period?
What we are looking at today is clearly a central bank policy which may push the global economy into some recession. I think it's likely to be shallow, to be honest, actually, rather than a deep recession. Look, to be honest, small caps don't do brilliantly well in a recession. The economic sensitivity of small caps, the sector bias, tends to mean they tend to do less well in recessionary periods and better in expansionary periods. However, I don't think this is a typically conventional recession in the sense that we're entering it into what's driven by central banks. You know, you've got fairly full employment, you've got rising rising wages. The consumer's not that bad place. The kind of tightening around the cost of living clearly coming to the fore, but it's not a typical recession. I think it will be generally fairly light recession or kind of shallow. And I think also this before you enter a recession, you're in a period when small caps have already materially underperformed large caps. I think small cap index has now underperformed the FTSE 100 10 months in a row, which is it's unprecedented. So small caps are already massively underperformed. So although, the outlook, small caps don't tend to do brilliantly well in a recession, I think we've already gone through a lot of that derating.
Right.
And there's a lot of value there apparent already.
I mean, you talked about a recession there and also cost of living crisis. Now, obviously, this has a massive impact on businesses and consumers as well. Does, a recession change the types of businesses or sectors you invest in? For example, do you increase the weighting in consumer staples whilst reducing the weighting in consumer discretionary?
I think you have to go back to the point about this fund is we are very low turnover. So the average holding period is over 5 years. We don't tend to churn and burn our portfolio. We are very long-term in our approach. And to be fair, within small cap, liquidity always plays a part in that factor. So look, we're not suddenly flipping around from sector to sector depending on the macro environment. Macro plays a part in stock selection.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, we're looking at the longer term here. And so clearly the portfolio has not materially changed over the last 6 months, and I don't see it materially changing. We're invested in companies we believe in the long term, and we'll use this period of down markets to top up in those positions.
On a more positive note, small cap stocks, by their very nature, are more agile in times of change or volatility and tend to have more localized supply chains. Now, you have exposure to tech stocks, which have been heavily impacted by semiconductor shortages, for example. What are you hearing from your portfolio companies about supply chain resilience, and how are they dealing with some of these rising input costs?
Look, I think supply, you say small caps, more localized. I mean, yeah, it is true that small caps tend to be more domestically biased, but the UK market is a very international market. So even in our portfolio, which is a smaller mid-cap portfolio, around half of the sales of our portfolio companies go to overseas markets.
Mm.
So naturally, they're as exposed to the global supply chain as any other business. That's clearly been an issue now for well over a year now. And that's been a rolling maul of issues around semiconductors and then into metals and then to other aspects and logistics and the cost of container shipping. It's not getting any worse. Situation that most companies have managed pretty well up to this point. So from a supply chain perspective, we think the situation is difficult, but actually manageable for most companies. And in some areas, actually is improving as we stand today.
Interestingly, looking at your portfolio positioning, given that economies are reopening and international travel is recovering, you're underweight to the travel and leisure sector. Why is that?
So travel and leisure, it's not really international travel orientated from a small cap perspective. So if you think about where we have travel and leisure exposure, we have more UK domestic exposure. So we have a couple of pub companies, Young's and Mitchell & Butler. We have Restaurant Group, which owns Chiquita's, Frank & Benny's, Wagamama's and some pubs, and Hollywood Bowl. There is very little exposure you can get really to holidays, which we don't particularly like because we think they're pretty low quality earnings. And the other areas in travel and leisure are gambling, which we don't own because of regulatory issues and ESG, and also the bus and travel stocks, again, not really our kind of thing. So the international travel is not really a kind of a major driver of the hotel and leisure sector within the UK market. You know, we've got exposure in those domestic names where we feel have got good long-term prospects. Where we do have exposure to an improving international travel market is the business-to-business exhibitions and conference companies. Now, clearly, they had a really tough COVID. You know, essentially you couldn't travel overseas and clearly couldn't go to conferences and exhibitions. As global markets have opened up, they are seeing a decent rebound in their business. And we've got companies like Euromoney, Essential and Hive, which are benefiting from that reopening of global markets.
You raised that point quite early on with regards to, you know, the UK as an international market. Now, though the trusts primarily invest in UK companies, the end sales of some of these businesses are very diverse and global in nature. Has this dispersion in regional earnings helped some of these businesses cope with some of the weaknesses we've seen in some of their end markets?
Look, I think it's one exactly that feature of the UK market is international by nature. Around half the sales of our portfolio companies go to overseas, so that diversity provides some resilience. Although at the moment, clearly a recession tends to be global in nature, and I suppose not, you know, having exposure, it's quite difficult to really kind of to avoid that.
Yeah.
So I think per se that we like that diversity of geographic exposure. It certainly helps, and I think what you find is those companies that have in the UK market, particularly in SMID, that have high overseas exposure are typically market leaders in their global field. It means they're kind of long-term winners, hopefully. But I think it's pretty hard to avoid a recession across the globe.
Now, the trust, though predominantly focused on growth, has consistently raised its dividends over the last 18 years. Now, again, you know, the sentiment is that investors usually tend to like small cap stocks, particularly with that within the accumulation phase of their portfolio. Should investors begin to consider small cap stocks and in the decumulation phase as well?
Yeah, so we've got a very good track record of dividend growth in HSL. So over the last 18 years, we've grown our dividend by 23.9% compound rate. What does that essentially mean? Well, it basically means that, you know, the underlying, you know, dividend growth of our portfolio companies has been extremely good over that period of time, which reflects the fact that we are investing in growth companies who, you know, typically are growing their earnings faster and they're clearly can pay higher dividends. We like profitable cash generative dividend paying business. So now we've had an exceptional period of dividend growth in the last 18 years. I'm not sure we're going to see that replicate the next 18 years, but certainly the nature of our portfolio means that the dividend growth should be relatively decent. The flip side of that, the yield on the trust is going to be lower than the UK market because we're, you know, going to have a portfolio of slightly highly more value companies with a lower dividend yield starting, but obviously clearly that growth will push that yield over time. And I think if you go back and look at, if you put £1,000 into Henderson Small Companies the day I joined 19 years ago, you'd now be yielding 30% on cost. So it's a very good, strong, long-term growth record of dividends. So I think if you can take a long, kind of medium to long-term approach to investing, you can have a very good income story for investing in a portfolio of good growth UK smaller companies. And hopefully over that period of time get good capital growth too.
Now, the topic around ESG has intensified over the last few years, largely due to the pandemic and the war in Ukraine. As a trust, what is your approach to ESG and how do you factor this into your stock selection process?
Yeah, ESG has been an area that's become increasingly a focus for investors, fund managers, the investment community in general, quite rightly so. And you know, at the moment these days, clearly, obviously, it's more of a hygiene factor than a kind of the than a nice to have factor. You know, we've always had strong engagement with our underlying portfolio. We meet our companies at least twice a year. We obviously, as long term shareholders, get to know them pretty well, and you know, we've always taken a view that we should be engaged about, you know, key matters, which includes ESG. So, you know, we've always had that strong engagement process and we've always had a very strong kind of a perspective on what's important from an environmental, social and governance perspective. I think also the nature of our portfolio being, you know, growth orientated quality businesses means that we tend to be in those companies that probably have better ESG, because obviously those clearly are going to have a kind of a, to be a growing business in a dynamic market, you need to have, you know, strong ESG policies. So yeah, we've always had a very strong engagement. And I think, it, you know, going forward, that isn't going to change. We've got a very, you know, focused approach to ensuring that our portfolio companies deliver on, you know, the improvements and the journey they're making on environment, social and governance matters. So yeah, very important and will remain very important going forward.
Well, that's interesting. Could you provide an example of how engagement with the business you invest in has led to positive change?
Interesting example is we wrote to all of our portfolio companies last year, and we outlined areas where we felt they should be focused from an ESG perspective. So, you know, we talk about diversity and inclusion, board composition, pay, remuneration, equal pay, carbon emissions. But specifically, we also asked them that, well, so we told them essentially that if we did not expect them to be paying a dividend if they were receiving government bailouts, particularly furlough payments. And we felt it's kind of morally unacceptable to be paying money to shareholders when you were clearly receiving a bailout from the government. And that, you know, that letter prompted an awful lot of discussion, good communication, good consultation, good discussion with our portfolio companies, a lot of positive feedback. They were, you know, good to get, you know, sort of kind of a framework for them to be working on Tesla ESG. And specifically on the furlough issue, we definitely changed minds. Boards clearly took that on board, and you know, some of those actually felt actually that was a kind of a correct moral response to do in terms of what's going on with the COVID crisis and shelved dividend plans. So I think that was a kind of a positive impact that we had. And I, you know, my point from ESG perspective is that, you know, we are a top 10, typically top 10 institutional investor in these businesses. Our views do matter. And therefore, clearly, that engagement we have with them can genuinely change how they go forward on these issues.
Great. Well, Neil, thank you for joining us, and that's all the time we have today. Thanks,
Andrew. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulatory record keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 3594615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited, Reg number 2606646, each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate in London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority, and Henderson Management S.A, Reg number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitbourg, L1273 Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission du Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson. Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.
Growth investing. Growth investors search for companies they believe have strong growth potential. Their earnings are expected to grow at an above average rate compared to the rest of the market, and therefore there is an expectation that their share prices will increase in value. Value investing. Value investors search for companies that they believe are undervalued by the market, and therefore expect their share price to increase. One of the favored techniques is to buy companies with low price to earnings, P/E, ratios, inflation, the rate at which the prices of goods and services are rising in an economy. The CPI and RPI are two common measures. Recession. A recession is a macroeconomic term that refers to a significant decline in general economic activity in a designated region. It had been typically recognized as two consecutive quarters of economic decline, as reflected by GDP in conjunction with monthly indicators such as a rise in unemployment. Monetary policy. The policies of a central bank, aimed at influencing the level of inflation and growth in an economy. It includes controlling interest rates and the supply of money. Monetary stimulus refers to a central bank increasing the supply of money and lowering borrowing costs. Monetary tightening refers to central bank activity aimed at curbing inflation and slowing down growth in the economy by raising interest rates and reducing the supply of money. Environmental, social, and governance, ESG, environmental, social, and governance, ESG, or sustainable investing considers factors beyond traditional financial analysis. This may limit available investments and cause performance and exposures to differ from, and potentially be more concentrated in certain areas than the broader market.